Hello, and welcome to episode 163 of the Film Yak Podcast. I'm John.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm JR.
This week we're talking Kevin's pick, The Favorite, from 2018, directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. He's the director with the Lanthimos. Get it? His first collaboration with Emma Stone, right? And second collaboration with Olivia Colman and Rachel Weisz, and also starring Nicholas Hoult and other actors, British actors who Kevin no doubt knows, but I don't. And
I do.
We're also going to talk other stuff we watched, like always, and a little homework. Thanks for joining us. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
Rocking it.
How's school going so far?
It's good. I'm 2 weeks in and the kids are still nice, so I guess we're doing a little bit better than last year.
Yeah, same. The kids are better this year. They're not insanely rude like they were last year, and they don't know. There's a lot less sort of just open
containers.
Hostility.
Just like, they tried to push my buttons a lot last year for some reason. I don't know why. And I'm in a good mood still so far in the year. So I'm coming in every day, just sort of letting stuff roll off my back a lot. And there's not a lot of pushback so far, which is good. It's good.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I have less free time. So JR will be happy to hear that. He hates my free time. He gets very jealous.
I do. I do hate it. I can confirm that. My year, for the first time, I don't have, we have 8 periods a day. I don't have an 8th period, which I was worried that if that ever happened to me, I'd be like, I wouldn't be productive. I wouldn't get stuff done. And 2 weeks in, that is true. But I don't have an 8th period. And just every year, the 8th period has been the worst. It's just, making kids read and write at the end of an 8-hour day, just like that blows. It's just not a good time for language arts.
Are you not productive in, like, you're not doing schoolwork? Or are you just, what are you doing?
Yeah, like I'm not grading.
Who gives a shit? Are you kidding me? That's your break. What's wrong with that?
It's not a break. It's a break. It's my work time.
Oh, give me a break, dude. Fucking fell for that. What are
my options? Grade at home?
Oh, I guess if you have to grade, you could grade during that time. I don't know.
You don't grade your assignments?
I find class time to grade. I put my kids on autopilot doing an assignment, and I grade the last assignment.
Well, that will happen later in the year. That definitely does not happen in the first 2 weeks for me. And there will, like every year, these kids just need too much. Mm-hmm. They ask too many questions. Nope. They're like, it'll be April and they're like, how do I write a claim? And I'll be like, oh God.
That's why you gotta teach seniors, man. They don't need a lot of hand holding. I mean, they in reality they do, but you can get away with not holding their hand, and then blame them for the shortcomings.
One day I'll decide to make my life easier and go teach high school.
To be honest with you, I still talk to Winston, and he's still in middle school also, and I do not understand you guys who want to continue to teach middle school. I do not get it. But, God bless
you. I don't get it either. the high school across the parking lot from me, it's like, they're, never in school. And, I'll be texting with a coworker who's gone over there, and she's like, I'm in my op period time, I'm in my meeting time. I was like, do you teach? And she's like, sometimes. Just like,
yeah, man.
The freshmen have a test today, so no one else has school. I'm like, what?
Excuse me?
That happens all the time.
Like the LEAP test or whatever? Yeah. Or whatever.
Whatever
the equivalent is.
And whenever there's a day that the juniors take the ACT and it's a half day for the juniors and no one else goes.
Oh, wow.
And
we don't even have that. That's cool.
Dang.
Yeah.
Our school
won't do anything.
Our school becomes like absolute chaos during testing time. Like they haven't figured that out yet, that they should just send kids home.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's always like, I understand middle school is like, it's hard to do like the half days, you know, even if you have like an exam schedule stuff, just because they have no way to get home unless, you know, and the parents are at work, stuff like that. But yeah, the high schools in Colorado have gone the other direction. It's just like, if there's anything going on with a certain group of people, no other groups of people are at the school.
Wow.
And
sounds awesome though.
Yeah.
Sounds really amazing.
Go work there one day.
Yeah,
you should. I'm gonna pitch that to my faculty.
Send them the fuck home.
My admin. That sounds really. Yeah, that's. Yeah. I mean, that's such a smart idea, actually. Now that I think about it. But okay. Well, enough of that. Kevin, how's work with you, bud? I'll skip over you just because you're not a teacher. Go ahead.
So, I'm actually the opposite of you guys. Like when school is in session.
Mm-hmm.
I like, you know, people just disappear. Like I have like a solid, like 2 months of like concentrated activity in June and July. And then like, you know, first week of August rolls around and it's like, you know, where are the people?
Oh yeah.
There were people here, you know, there was a bar and a dance floor.
Sure, George. Sure.
But yeah. So.
Yeah, damn. I guess they come back at some point. They have to read.
Yeah.
Although I guess you know, schools have libraries too.
Yeah.
As if the kids go to the library. Are you kidding?
They do in the summer.
Like, right. That's what I'm saying. Like, during the school, they're going there for school. I mean, they're going in the summer to like goof off and watch YouTube and shit, right? I mean, like they're not there to learn.
Well, no, they don't come to stay during the summer. Like they come to get their stuff and then they leave.
Oh, okay.
Little kids like to read. They like books.
That's fair. Yeah, it's fair. Yeah. I forget Kevin is a children's guy. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, every now and then, like, and you know, it's mostly good, but every now and then you have jackasses who stick around for a lot longer than they need to. And you know, there's this one girl who like comes in every now and then, and like she's like 11, and she's like, I never knew that I would find myself talking about an 11-year-old, you know, using, you know, really foul language. But this girl is just awful bully. And she's 11 years old and she insists on only reading picture books.
Well,
and the only reason she wants to read them apparently is because there's some other girl who reads more than she does. And she's got a, you know, one upper.
You know, I mean, that's part of what happens when you incentivize reading with things like accelerated reader. We turn reading into points and prizes and competition.
Yeah, for sure.
But
if you don't turn it into prizes in the competition, though, then no kids read. Or the three kids who were going to read anyway will read, and that's about it. Like, we don't have AR. I mean, obviously, like, it's high school. There's nothing like that here in my high school, and literally no one reads. I mean, I have like a handful of students every year who will bring a book to class and like read when they're done working or something. Other than that, no one's reading shit ever.
Baton Rouge High implemented AR, like the high school.
Really?
When I was there, like I started there at junior year, and the year that I started, my brother started as a freshman, and he had to do AR. So it was like incoming kids. So, you know, it was like they weren't going to make the kids who didn't have to do it before do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're you know, they don't need to read. They're fucked anyway, I guess. But that was bizarre because, like, I definitely considered that an elementary thing because I had it at my elementary school. I just never considered why a high schooler would need to be forced to read. And then,
that's strange. I never had anything like that.
No?
Maybe I did, but I don't remember. I have like zero memory of that. So maybe.
Like my mom keeps like, you know, reposting on Facebook about, you know, reading so much and getting a free pan pizza from Pizza Hut.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that at all.
I just remember that. Yeah.
Like I
remember going to Pizza Hut.
If we did that, I for sure don't have any memory of it.
I don't know if it was a reading thing. I remember going to Pizza Hut and getting an X-Men comic and an X-Men cartoon VHS tape somehow. I don't remember how I got them from Pizza Hut, but I got them from Pizza Hut.
We had Pizza Hut, pan pizzas for reading, and we also had fries, French fries for like grades. You would go like McDonald's. You go to McDonald's and get your free fry because you got all A's and B's or whatever.
Yeah. JR, which grade do you teach?
Eighth grade.
Okay. Are you familiar with Gordon Corman at all? Like Restart or?
Yeah, I've been forced to read Restart 3 times. Okay. Not like teaching it. It's like a little young for eighth grade, but the we do like one book, one school every year. Like everybody reads the book, and it's been Restart twice, and I had already read it before when I was in Baton Rouge.
Okay.
A lot of Restart.
Yeah. So like it's a relatively short book, you know, like 200 some odd pages. The amount of ingoing sixth graders who are like, isn't there anything shorter? It's like, no. This is sixth grade. Like, this is where you're at now. Like, it doesn't get any better than this.
So, I mean, it's like,
yeah, like if you think if you think this is something you can't handle, then like I've got bad news for you.
Well, yeah, no. Yeah.
I just sent you guys the commercial for the X-Men tape. It's apparently just a $5 purchase with any pizza. So my parents must have done this multiple times because I have both trading cards they're advertising here. I still have them.
Nice.
So
that's cool.
I don't have these comics though. They're like mini comics. I don't even remember having those, but I remember having a comic, but it was like a full size one. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. Let's jump right into to our review this week.
Education Corner.
All right. We're going to talk about Kevin's pick, The Favorite, which is directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. And Kevin, why this movie? Why now?
So I absolutely loved it when I saw it in the theater back in 2018. It was my 6 out of 5 for that year. And I've, you know, mentioned to you guys before, like, I feel like The Lobster, Killing of a Sacred Deer, and some with Poor Things. I mean, obviously, you know, like it just came out like relatively recently. So obviously it's kind of fresh in everybody's mind. And, you know, Willem Dafoe is in it. So that kind of, you know, gives it even more. But for whatever reason, it seems like The Favorite is really like Olivia Colman won Best Actress. Mm-hmm. For this movie, but like it seems to be largely forgotten about. Like, no Lanthimos fans, you know, like, you know, any of the movie people on like Instagram or TikTok, like they seem to just not mention this like at all. And I was like, why? As far as I was concerned, this was my favorite Lanthimos, like by a like easy.
Can I put forward a theory?
Go ahead.
I don't know. Like, I don't have any data to back up what I'm saying. But I feel like The Favorite it's not nearly as striking in like how weird it is.
I would agree with that.
Compared to The Lobster or Killing of a Sacred Deer. And Killing of a Sacred Deer has like definitely taken on like new life. I feel like it's a movie that's like constantly going up in people's, you know, as people keep rewatching it, just because it is so fucked up and strange. And
yeah,
I also think that like in the past like 5 years or 6 years, like The Favorite hasn't had like a run on Netflix or Hulu or anywhere else where it's been like super easy for people to watch it. And and I feel like his other movies have been. And maybe I'm making that up.
It's not available right now, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think... I think it was on Hulu for, like, a limited amount of time, which makes sense because the writer, Tony McNamara, like, he did The Great for Hulu.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. Like, it's not as readily available for whatever reason.
But I mean, it's a sellout movie, right? Like, he gets a, you know, he's working with another writer. He didn't write this, and he's working with a real studio. And he makes his Oscar friendly movie, even though that is, of course, like that minimizes this movie a great deal.
Is that what we're reading this as, that this is the reason he made this movie, was to
no
access the Oscars?
I don't think that, but I think if you decided you wanted to view it that way, you could.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I definitely agree with JR. Like, it doesn't have like the obvious weirdness. I mean, apart from, like, you know, the fisheye lens through, like, parts of it, but yeah, it doesn't have the obvious weirdness. It doesn't have the like kitschiness, I guess you'd say, of, like, you know, like lots of times when, you know, people are posting on social media about like Poor Things, it's usually like, you know, Emma Stone doing some weird dance, which there is weird dancing in this movie. But it's also, like, you know, Mark Ruffalo, like, eating in a weird way, or, like, you know, Willem Dafoe with his insane makeup. Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, the Poor Things is, like, beyond it being stranger, obviously, and, like, not, you know, it's like a more like leaning into, like, Gilliam territory. It's also like way more broadly comedic than The Favorite. I mean, The Favorite is comedic, but this is, it's like a dark comedy, and Poor Things is a dark comedy too, but it's like, I mean, Mark Ruffalo is ridiculous in Poor Things. There's no yeah. equivalent. I mean, Nicholas Holt is not nearly as insanely ridiculous in The Favorite.
Right.
Even though he is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. His second scene when he doesn't get what he wants. I mean, he, like, turns and, like, kicks something over. Yeah. And in that moment I was like, oh, this is going to be broader than I remember. And then that tones back down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny too. Like,
fastest duck in the city.
Yeah. He does not leave my sight. But, like, yeah, like, shoot, I had something.
He lost it.
Not the duck though.
Not the duck. Ah, shit. y'all talk about something. I'll
vamp. It'll come back to me at some point. All right. No, go ahead. By all means,
we'll edit it out. It's fine.
So I'm sure you guys have seen, you know, like, you know, like those endless memes about the mummy, and, you know, like, you know, the mummy was my bisexual awakening because of Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz. And I think, you know, like people talk about, you know, liking. Oh, okay.
I haven't either.
Guess it's just me. But yeah, like, people talk about liking Rachel Weisz, and it's like, do you though? Because Rachel Weisz fucking kills it in this movie, and nobody talks about her in this. They all talk about the mummy or the Mummy Returns. I mean, you guys tell me, like, do they talk about the movie she did with Rachel McAdams? Or no. Do they talk what? About
they should, though. They should talk about that movie.
Yeah, like the
not her performance, but yeah.
Something.
I mean, didn't she won an Oscar for The Constant Gardener, right?
She did, yeah. That was,
yeah, like, nobody talks about that movie either. So
I don't know. It's just,
I agree. I mean, I agree with you. She's excellent in this film.
I would chalk what you're talking about right now, Kevin, up to, like, nostalgia. Like, yeah, you know, you're probably looking at content who are, like, from people who are of a certain age. So, like, I would expect people to be mentioning her in things like Definitely Maybe, and yeah, the Mummy stuff, and even The Fountain and Constantine.
Nobody talks about The Fountain. Are you kidding me? And she is awesome in that.
I agree that people talk about The Fountain, but I'd still expect them to talk about those genre movies that came out 20 years ago more than they would talk about The Favorite, even though you're right that she's incredible in this movie and she was nominated for an Oscar. But, you know, she was one of three people nominated for an Oscar.
That's true.
Was it just three? No Holt, right?
No Holt. Just the three actresses, I believe. I'm with Kevin. I think she's the standout performance. I like all three actresses. I like all three performances, and I am fine with Olivia Colman winning. But I think that Rachel Weisz was a little bit robbed, a little bit, tiny bit.
I mean, different category. Who?
Sure.
Well, who won? Because it wasn't Emma.
It was Colman.
No, different was category.
She, oh, different. Oh, you're saying who won the actual?
Best supporting.
Three. I don't know who won. I'm horrible. No,
Olivia Colman robbed Glenn Close of her performance in a really shitty movie
that everyone had. Alfred Nobbs or whatever.
No, it was The Wife.
Oh, The Wife.
Oh,
Nobbs was a handful of years earlier.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know. I'm so, dude, on those fucking Cinematrixes, they're like, when they do like 2015 to 2024, like today, and I was just like, no movie has come out in the last 10 years. Everything is from 2012. It's insane. It's just like, it's nuts.
Yeah.
It's so difficult.
Yeah. And like, I know Jane Fonda from like two things, and neither of them were applicable in any of the three categories.
Well, that's.
I know Monster-in-Law and Barbarella.
Monster-in-Law made $100 million. I used it for the $100 million mark.
Oh shit!
Yeah,
you guys are crazy. I mean, I can't believe you've never seen like either of the Book Club films.
Actually, Nicole mentioned that to me. She was like, "Oh, you should have used the Book Club," and I was like, "What the fuck is the Book Club?"
I used a sequel for one of them.
I never even heard of that shit.
Did you do 80 for Brady?
I did for 2015 to 2024. I was like, and I told, that's why I said, I told her, I was like, I could not name another Jane Fonda movie from the last 10 years. And I know she's been in them. I just don't know what they are.
Yeah. I mean,
The Book Club. I don't, you know, it's like, I don't. Yeah.
So, sorry, I finally got to it. It took me a minute. Rachel Weisz lost to Regina King in If Beale Street Could Talk. Regina King is another nemesis of John when she comes up.
It's insane. And, I would have bet money if you were like, has Regina King ever been nominated or won an Oscar? I would have said, absolutely not. When would that have happened? How did I miss that? I totally missed that, dude. Regina King has an Oscar? Oh my God. I'm woefully ignorant about her.
She's good in that movie. This category is really, it's not bad, but like, this is the Vice year, and Amy Adams is nominated for Vice. Like, I think Vice is one of the just like worst pieces of shit that has been nominated for any Oscars. And then the actress from Roma, and like Roma is just not my favorite.
Getting back to The Favorite.
Yeah.
We're way off topic here. All right. It's not tough to talk about, but it's just like, I don't have a lot of negative things to say about this. Like, it's just a really well-constructed, well-made movie. I guess if anything, I guess I would argue that it's like some of the comedic beats don't work for me, especially early on. Like when Emma Stone first arrives at the palace, like some of the comedic stuff with her character initially, and like, I guess overall, like in the dialogue, there's a lot of like sort of extremely quick sort of quippy stuff that happens. And I can see what's appealing about that, but it didn't necessarily work for me. I did check a couple of times though, but I mean, I think it just works more as a drama about, you know, like the power dynamic, obviously, between the three lead characters and the men who are, or the one man who's manipulating the characters from the outside.
Yeah. Watching this again, like I was thinking actually, like, it reminded me a lot of Challengers in that, like, it's not, you know, what's in the movie, what's in The Favorite, like Challengers, like you would, like on the surface, like you could, say that, oh, you know, this is a love triangle. But, like, no, it's like, just like, you know, this is a power triangle. And they're, they're all trying to, you know, get things one way or another. And, like, and just like, like Olivia Coleman is kind of like Mike Feist. Like, you know,
Feist. I would say Feist. I don't know.
Okay, yeah. Like Mike Feist, you know, like someone who's like genuine and like really not interested that much in power because of the other things that they're you know, in their hearts. Mm-hmm. But then you have like two, you know, kind of dislikable people in Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz, and like neither of them end up really getting what they want, because, you know, spoiler alert for, you know, the end of the movie, like, even though Emma Stone is kind of, you know, usurped Rachel Weisz's place, the queen knows that she's not a good person and that she's, you know, only out for power. So, you know, there's that last little bit of like her like pulling her hair. So, you know, Emma Stone might be where she wants to be right now, but that probably won't last long.
Just
go ahead.
Do you land on like she misses Lady Sarah and like feels like Lady Sarah genuinely loved her, where Emma Stone's character Abigail does not?
Like, I think so. And
do we agree with that?
I would say so. Yeah. I mean,
that,
I think
that Sarah loves her more.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I think, you know, it's weird as from a, you know, relationship power dynamic, because like as much, you know, Queen Anne, you know, she's the queen, so apparently she has the power, but we know from watching the movie that Sarah is the one who really is wielding that power. You know, whether she has any of her own is kind of, you know, debatable, but I think like what brought them together was a genuine affection for each other. But as time went on, and, you know, Anne obviously with her horrible health and losing 17 children, you know, like I don't understand how someone can just walk around after losing like one child, let alone, you know, rule a kingdom. And, you know, like obviously England has its faults, but it was, you know, the big power for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years. So you've got someone struggling physically and mentally, you know, trying to rule this kingdom. And yeah, then you have someone who feels like they can help. And then, you know, things go a little far and, oh, well, you know, obviously I'm the best person to do this because you can't. But then, like, you know, I don't know, it's also sort of, it's, you know, obviously manipulative, because towards the end when she's like, you know, she will never tell you that you look like a badger, I will, and that's true love. Like, maybe what she's saying could be, you know, could be true love, but it's also seriously fucking manipulative.
Yeah, and that's so,
yeah,
and that's why I think I walk away with like a like the queen misses what she had, and I don't necessarily think what she had was the love that she thinks it was, and I guess you could say like Lady Sarah like writing the letters and throwing them away and stuff like that at the end is suggesting that she misses the queen too, but I don't know if I'm necessarily buying that. But that's okay. That doesn't mean the movie doesn't work.
Well, she misses being in the court.
She certainly misses that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that it matters too much to me. I mean, to me anyway. I don't care. Like, I don't care at the end of the day, like, if she's I think it does, the movie does a really interesting thing where it starts with Emma Stone's character being like the protagonist, and you feel bad for her for these various things that are happening, like when she gets the prank, the lie, and the beating after she puts the stuff on the queen's leg. And she's sort of the focal point of the film, and then like and Rachel Weisz, Lady Sarah, is like her foil, like she's the antagonist, and then it like switches. There's like an interesting, you know, where Rachel Weisz is now on the bottom, and she becomes like the person you're almost rooting for. I mean, I was anyway, when she was after the whole horse thing, all the poisoning.
Yeah.
I was like, this is really interesting how she's sort of the underdog now, who's going to have to come back and fight her way into the court again. I really thought that's how it was going. I didn't remember how it ended at all. I mean, I remember the image of the rabbits, but I didn't remember how it ended. And I was really thinking she was going to somehow come back and sort of put Emma Stone in their place. But unfortunately, it just didn't happen that way, you know. But I just thought it was interesting, the switch that they did. I think it works really well. And I haven't seen a lot of movies that managed to accomplish something like that, I don't think. Where they take, you know, the hero and make the hero the villain at the end of the film. I don't know. And vice versa. I like the...
Vice versa.
I always say vice, by the way. Rachel Weisz. I don't know if I'm... That's pretentious or something, but I don't know. I like the cinematography and the direction a lot in this. But mainly with the direction, the quick panning that they do constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just really very, I don't even know what to say about it. It's just, I like it a lot. It's really nice. It does something for me.
Something I had not noticed when watching this previously, that like anytime they actually go outside the manor, like she gets on a horse, things like that, we get like a much more naturalistic cinematography style, which seems obvious, should make sense, but you know, it's like we get a lot more camera movement. It's not, you know, much more, you know, the natural lighting just looks good. I was like, oh, we're doing a little mini Malix here.
I was reading
outside
the trivia on IMDb. They were saying that they mostly used available light.
Nice.
For everything.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
But and, I get the impression that was because of the budget or something, because they kept a lot of the trivia is about how small of a budget they had to shoot this with. Like they had to make the costumes from scratch because renting them would have cost too much. And then that they used recycled like jeans from thrift stores to make the outfits for the kitchen staff. Which I thought was interesting.
Oh, like those like blue corsets?
Yeah, so it's like all denim, apparently, which is anachronistic, but like they had to do what they had to do, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you guys feel about the chapter headings?
I enjoyed them. I mean,
you know, great use of space. No notes, no issues.
I have a note, which is I don't understand why they exist, and I hate them. But that's the only thing I don't like about the movie at all, really. It's the except for the comedy beats that don't work for me, which isn't a huge knock against it. The chapters, I don't understand why you would separate a movie into chapters, to be honest, ever. But like, especially these with the chapter headings are so uninspired, and they just feel like they're just like randomly plucked from the dialogue, and I don't understand what they're mean at, or like what the meaning is, or even why they're divided the way they are, like what we're getting in chapter 3 versus chapter 2, and why we needed those to be separated by a chapter heading. I don't, you know, that they don't seem to, nothing really seems to necessitate that, as far as I could tell. But that's just me. I don't like them.
I think we're getting at like a Peter Greenaway style attempt at great literature. You know?
So it's just it's purely a nod, because that Draftsman's Contract is one of the films that Lanthimos says is inspiring this film.
So it is purely a nod.
Yeah, well, that's lame. Nods are lame. The cinematography nods enough to, you know, to Kubrick among others, but the
Draftsman's Contract is great.
Draftsman's Contract is good. I like it a lot. But the I have a note about the Kubrickian sort of style here, and I don't know if this movie is more Kubrickian than Lanthimos' other stuff, because I don't know if I feel that way because it's like Barry Lyndon, you know, it's like set in a similar time and place, or if it actually is borrowing more heavily than, say, you know, obviously like Poor Things doesn't borrow as heavily from Kubrick as the Kubrick playbook as this does. Fair?
Because it's borrowed. I mean, fair about Poor Things?
Well, yeah.
I think Poor Things is borrowing from a lot of other places.
I agree.
As far as like Barry Lyndon, though, I would say that this movie borrows a lot more from The Shining with the like quick, you know, like camera movements and especially the score.
Well, the score, I mean, the score in particular, though, a lot of Kubrick's movies are scored by source music, like, you know, Schubert and shit like this. So it's like, that all sounded, I mean, but again, it's just like it bears similarities, not only time and place to Barry Lyndon, but also just like the sort of decadence that they are hinting at Barry Lyndon that they get way more into, I'd say, in this movie. But yeah, and then also like there's other things like the crossfades where they'll be close in on like Emma Stone, like it's like a, you know, profile of Emma Stone, and then it'll just fade slowly into the next scene, you know? And I feel like I've seen that before, but not necessarily from Kubrick. I feel like that's some other director he's aping, and I was trying to think of who it was, but and then I was thinking, like, is he aping guys who ape Kubrick? Is that he's two filmmakers removed now from Kubrick, and people are just lazy and calling him Kubrickian? But I don't know. I think Killing of a Sacred Deer is probably even more so. So there's shots in there that are so like a Kubrick, I guess, like, you know, a Kubrick type shot. So.
Yeah, for sure. Like the scene where like his kid is like going down the escalator and then falls and collapses, like that's very like that's straight out of like watching Frank run his laps around the
In 2001.
Yeah,
exactly. There you go.
Yeah.
I need to rewatch Killing of a Sacred Deer. Anyway, sorry, I just barring from the Kubrick, Kubrick power dynamics. Sorry, Lady Sarah is the victim. Okay, I'm out of notes. I'm out of notes. Yeah. I mean, like this movie just works for me, mostly on every level. And I think it's a very well made movie and a well crafted and acted film. And it's just one of those situations where you get three extremely talented actors in the central performances and a very stylistically gifted filmmaker directing someone else's words to perfection. One of the complaints I was seeing on Letterboxd, well, the complaints, Mark Sierra's review of this, he gave it 3 stars, and he was saying that the script was predictable, which I guess that's fair. I don't know.
I mean, it's history, so we already know what happens.
I don't know if that's what he's getting at so much as just like you know that, you know, I guess that the power dynamic is going to shift, right? That Emma Stone is going to take the place of Rachel Weisz, and that's going to be the sort of central conflict of the film. But I don't know.
Like, this is a movie of small details and great scenes. And it's like, did that guy know that Nicholas Holt was gonna just like shove Emma Stone into the ditch in the dark?
Did he know that Emma Stone was going to jerk off her husband on their wedding night?
Yeah. By the way, Joe Alwyn is like, you know, the ex-boyfriend of Taylor Swift, that guy. And and I've like, I know that I've seen him, like I've seen him as like a lead performer. Okay. And this movie Stars at Noon with Margaret Qualley, which is fine.
Oh, right, right. But,
like, I can't ever remember what he looks like. And so, like, I have, like, I don't know until, like, I'm looking on Letterboxd at who this guy is. It's like, oh, that's Joe Alwyn. Like, what?
Yeah, this is just another one of those guys. Like, if Joe Alwyn was on Cinematrix, I would fucking lose, dude. Like, I would not know.
Apparently he's in Kinds of Kindness also.
I've seen four of his films. I would have no idea he's in any of these.
Did you see Kinds of Kindness?
It's coming to Hulu end of the month. No, I didn't see it yet.
Yeah, it's on the 30th. Apparently he's in Miss Americana, the Taylor Swift documentary for Netflix. Yeah, I'd be screwed because I would only know Stars at Noon.
Yeah, apparently he's in Boy Erased, which I saw. I saw Mary Queen of Scots. He's in The Souvenir Part 2. I have no idea. I would have no idea.
Never caught up with that.
I didn't either, but I'm just saying, you know, these are like movies that I'm aware exist. It's just strange. Yeah. I saw Billy Lynn's long halftime walk.
it might be part of the point. Like, he is totally unmemorable in this film. He's not bad, but he is just there. He is being used by everyone, it seems.
Oh my god. Yeah. He's in a new Hamlet that's coming out.
Oh, the Hamnet thing?
No. He's in that too. He's in a new, but he's also, that's not about Hamlet. That's about Shakespeare's kid dying. This is a movie called Hamlet where he plays Laertes and Riz Ahmed plays Hamlet. Timothy Spall as Polonius?
Whoa.
Heavy hitters.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, I don't know. I like The Favourite's great. It's great. It's just great.
Yes.
Apparently, this is the first movie where Emma Stone was nude, and Olivia Colman tried to talk her out of being nude in the film, but she really wanted to be.
I mean, it's a good nude scene. You know, it's like framed just so like she knows when.
It's perfect.
When Rachel Weisz comes through that door, she's perfect. Gonna see that boob.
The information exchange there of like Emma Stone knows about Rachel Weisz or Lady Sarah and the Queen. Lady Sarah doesn't know that Rachel Weisz knows that. She stumbles in on them asleep, nude. She doesn't know that Emma Stone sees her because she turns around and then Emma Stone opens her eyes. So it's a good, I don't know. It's just really cleverly constructed to show, you know, that Emma Stone has the complete upper hand in the situation at that point.
Yeah. So when Emma Stone says your secrets are safe with me, even your biggest secrets, and Rachel Weisz does the blank firing at her, it's like, does she not? What does she think Emma Stone's talking about?
Well, she had already confronted Lady Sarah about Nicholas Holt approaching her, right? So I think she's more, I would assume Lady Sarah's thinking about those things more.
Okay.
At that point. But had she seen her having sex with the Queen yet? Or
she put had that together? She had seen them. Like, she was trying to, like, she was in the library.
No, I'm saying had Rachel Weisz seen.
Oh, no, Emma she Stone had not. With the
Queen. Okay.
No.
But yeah, I would assume, like, they're talking about the state secret shit then at that point, you know. But yeah, I don't know. It's a good movie. What do you want from me? What do you want?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm ready to rate it unless you guys have more. Oh, also, Lady Sarah is a descendant, or Winston Churchill is a descendant of Lady Sarah.
Yes.
It's in the trivia. And apparently, Prince Charles also. Prince Charles. Not Prince Charles. Diana.
Oh, well.
Diana. So Harry, when Harry or William, whichever one of them becomes king, eventually.
William
apparently,
yeah,
you know, so she'll, a descendant of hers will be the leader of England.
Yeah,
I mean, British, you know, leader, does. Quote unquote.
Yeah,
so these are the Marlboroughs.
Mm-hmm. Marlboroughs. Yeah, they're Marlboro
men. Name? Yeah, Lord Marlborough. I can't say that word.
Marlboro.
I mean, it's basically like just the cigarette.
But yeah, it's, it, no, it, is, it yeah. is the cigarette. Marlboro. It's
spelled different.
No, I know, but it's the same. I mean, it's the same.
Yeah.
The cigarette is like a corruption of that, right? I mean, it's like an American version of that word.
Yeah.
They found this. Did they send people? Was a descendant of them who went to North Carolina, founded that company?
Hey, maybe.
I can't believe it.
Richmond, Virginia, it says, actually, but...
Mm.
I'm looking at the Marlboro.
Sorry. I don't have all my facts, guys. I'm sorry.
I should immediately went to there because I was going to look at the same thing. I was going to say, where did this start? Oh, yeah, because it started on, they opened a factory on Marlboro Street in London, which is spelled the British way.
Oh,
okay. Man.
And now Philip Morris owns them, so.
They own, like, all the cigarettes, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's Phil. Oh, I'm sorry. I misread this. British tobacconist Philip Morris opened the shop on Bond Street. And then after his death, his brother moved it to Marlboro Street.
Hmm. Oh, okay.
So, yeah. And yes,
it's Philip Morris. It's a British company?
Oh, yeah, apparently. Headquartered in Richmond.
Wow. I got to start buying different American made cigarettes. Yeah.
They are American made.
I know.
They make like all of them. Virginia Slims, Chesterfields,
Parliaments,
Marlboro, and Philip Morris makes them all. So they're the ones to blame. All right. Well, I hadn't even thought about my rating for this. This is a 5 in the theater. And I feel like it's still a 5. This is, you know, I don't know. I really enjoyed this film.
For me, it's still a 5. I don't know that it goes into 6 territory necessarily, but it's 100% a 5.
Yeah, I'm going to go 5. Still, I like it a lot. Mm. I find no fault in it.
Yeah, I said nothing bad about the film, but I'm going to go 4.5 just because.
Contrarian.
You know me.
I'm
just not quite there with how.
It's not as good as Babylon. We get it.
I mean,
he's rewatched Babylon so many times. He loves it.
Indeed.
I did love Babylon.
I actually have thought about rewatching it recently, but it's so long, you know. I was gonna find 3 hours to watch that thing.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, can I sneak in Horizon before we record?
Ooh.
The answer to that was no.
Great.
Who's got 3 hours?
Yeah. Well, you have to make 3 hours for Kinds of Kindness, right? Or like 2:45?
Yes, 2:45.
I mean,
yeah,
I will. Yeah. I don't know.
I'll do it for Jesse Plemons.
He won Best Actor at Cannes. You've got to. Well, all right, let's. Oh, we got to do our Letterbox Roulette. I totally exited out of the favorite. Here we go. Okay. So our actors are. Emma Stone. We'll just do the first 4, okay? Who's Mark Gatiss? Sure. Who the fuck is that?
He's in Sherlock.
No, yeah, I'm not doing all these British actors. Sorry. Emma Stone, Olivia Colman, Rachel Weisz, and Nicholas Hoult. Those are the actors. Out of 4.
3 of them are British.
That's okay, but they're like huge Hollywood actors, so.
Sure.
All right, and the person we're looking at is Rachel Weisz.
All right.
This should be interesting. JR's got this in the bag.
Oh, for sure.
Although
I'm missing a bunch of stuff.
You never saw Youth, did you?
Oh. I never saw Youth. I never saw Enemy at the Gates or Aragon.
Never saw Enemy at the Gates?
Oh.
Wow.
But I mean, you saw Brothers Bloom.
I think War is stupid.
Oh, no, you didn't. Oh, yeah, you didn't. Kevin did too.
You guys
suck. Ron had Ryan.
All right. My number is 11.
Now, wait a minute.
I'm not going to.
I've seen this. Bloom is good. No, I haven't seen this. Never mind.
She's in Chain Reaction?
Mm-hmm. I've seen Chain Reaction.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
He's gonna like he's gonna mark like the fucking TV show Dead Ringers is watched.
Just I
like,
haven't seen just it.
Just number up.
I wish I had now.
I do want to see creatures. That.
God damn it! I needed to.
What Beautiful Creatures?
Yeah.
Like the YA move book?
No, this is different.
Yeah, this is with her and. This isn't what I was thinking it was. I don't know what this is. Never mind. Petula and Dorothy cover up an accidental murder? I don't know.
Yeah,
don't
that's not this. The YA trash.
What's with Rachel Weisz? She plays a lot of lesbian roles, eh? I mean, whatever. It's just, you know.
You know, somebody's got to.
I'm fine with it. I just, you know, it's, I never noticed that before.
This and Disobedience and what else?
The one I was just talking about, Beautiful Creatures. Oh, she's okay. A lesbian in that one.
Mm.
Oh, wait, I just saw another one, too. Hang on. Okay. is my cousin Rachel a... No, it's not. I bet there's another one. Anyways, my number is 12.
Oh.
Mine's 21.
Fucking cocksucker.
I've seen Envy. With,
oh my god!
And no memory of her being in Envy.
Oh my god! You know, Kevin,
huh?
How many you got?
Kevin, 11.
Oh, you did? Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
You got one more than me, and JR's is yours, but inverted.
I didn't see Light like, Between Oceans.
I take this seriously, and you guys don't, and that's your fault.
Oh, none of us saw The Light Between Oceans.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be really bad.
Yeah.
Derek Cian France.
I see his name, but not supposed to be. I did not hear good things.
I never finished I Know This Much Is True, which was his HBO miniseries, so.
Mm.
And I didn't start.
Anyway. Okay, well, let's see what Kevin is watching. I'll watch it with you, Kevin. I'll watch it with you. 679.
Especially since we removed those British actors that Kevin had a chance with.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. If we had gotten,
Mark Gatiss?
him or James Smith, it would have been over for you guys.
All right, now this is a long one, so Kevin...
You'd have to
agree to this.
Yeah, there's always veto.
We can veto. It's The New World by Terrence Malick. Just 2.5 hours long.
Oh.
But we don't have to do this one. We can do it different.
What was our number was like if it's above 130 or 140 minutes?
We said above 2 hours actually. But
okay. Then yeah.
Yeah.
But we don't. I mean, yeah. Let's.
If you've seen it, and it's too long. Then veto.
Yeah, we both seen that, right? Have you seen that, Kevin?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you haven't seen it. Well,
no, I haven't.
Again, though, it's not.
I'm not against Malick. I would prefer something less than 2 hours.
Okay, that's fine.
If possible, you know. I don't want to have you like you know looking up numbers all night.
I'll just do one more. Okay, so. New number is 3482, which is, Kevin's in luck. It's an anime. It's a movie called Royal Space Force, The Wings of Hanemize. JR seen it and hated it, so he's lucky he doesn't have to watch it again. We do. It's from 1987. It's 2 hours long.
Okay.
Are you into this or you want to roll again?
Well,
so I'll give you one more veto if you're into it.
I am into it. Whether it's the availability of this, I would have major questions on.
It's gonna have to be like a download, maybe YouTube situation.
Okay. Well, I mean, if it's on YouTube, I'm way in. I can do a YouTube very easily.
Let's find out.
I'm looking right now. And it is not on YouTube. Mm. But it is in parts, 15 parts.
Oh.
not interested in that. I mean, we can download it if you want. I don't have a problem with that. You want to do that?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, this is what we're doing then. We're watching Royal Space Force, The Wings of Honeamies, however you say this. Here's hoping it's not a complete slog like anime can be for me sometimes. But anyway, boy, I mean, you landed right in the thick of the anime with that second one, dude. That's crazy. I wish it was Pat Labor, too. I would so watch Pat Labor.
Yeah, I saw back in March, they were showing Paprika, like it was in theaters, and I was like, well, shit, I want to see that. But then we ended up getting busy or something, and we couldn't go. But
oh, damn.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so we're gonna be watching Royal Space Force for next time. Let's move on to what we watched. Who wants to begin?
All right. Let's do this.
I have four things, so just like.
Actually, should Kevin start with the homework?
Oh, yeah.
Sure, Kevin, yeah.
Your homework was?
My Winnipeg. That's from right. Guy Madden, one of JR's favorites. Mm-hmm. So My Winnipeg is a quasi-documentary. It's about the city of Winnipeg and some of Guy Madden's personal history in the city, including stuff about his parents and his sister and some rivers called the Forks, which apparently there was a First Nation, I don't know, superstition, maybe the word, that there were underground rivers that matched them. It's in black and white.
Mostly.
Yeah, mostly. I was telling JR actually, like before we recorded, like, it was really interesting to see, like Guy, you know, Guy Madden lives, you know, raised in Winnipeg, a city that has like interesting history. Like one of the things he brings up is that Winnipeg apparently has like the highest rate of insomnia, like, I don't know, in the world or maybe in the country, in the continent. Anyway, but yeah, like interesting little tidbits. And living in, you know, Baton Rouge, we don't have that, or at least it's not nearly as readily available as, you know, like weird histories of Portland or weird histories of New York.
It's like if I made a fake documentary about Denver, I could go really deep into like the weird shit at the airport. Like we have weird shit at our airport that people think is like Illuminati. But yeah, Baton Rouge doesn't have that.
Yeah. I mean, apparently we used to have mobsters, but, you know, who didn't? So
it's just a normal racist southern city with oil rigs and stuff, oil rigs, oil refineries.
Yeah. So, it was interesting seeing him dive like deep into the weird history of Winnipeg. I enjoyed it. Wasn't the best thing I ever saw, but not boring, I will say that.
How did you feel about the style, the sort of the Guy Madden style, the atmosphere that he creates with his, you know, the editing and the treatment of the picture and stuff?
I thought it was interesting. Like it's definitely a throwback to like, you know, the 30s with, you know, that kind of like, or even further back, like it's kind of like, I don't know if you guys saw it. The, when I was doing my one of my Criterion challenges, I watched a thing, a silent movie called The Hellbound Train. And it was basically like, you know, like each car was like, you know, had its own like thing of decadence. You know, like jazz music, you know, if you dance to jazz music, you're going to hell, that kind of stuff. So yeah, like it was like kind of like that, only it's like that meets F for Fake, the Orson Welles movie. You know, very disjointed.
Yeah. Yes. And I, if you've not seen any of his like just narratives, you know, not quasi documentaries, I know this is a narrative, but I would try one. Like Careful is the one I would recommend, which is like it's a whole town in like the I think Swiss Alps, in the Alps, or maybe it's not named, but a similar mountain region where like any sound could trigger an avalanche at any moment. So everyone has to be very quiet. So it's just like every, you know, a lot of repression happening in literal and metaphorical ways. And it's, I think, hilarious and brilliant. I think I made John watch Archangel once.
You did.
And I don't think you dug it too much, but.
I think I gave it like a 3. I didn't hate it. Yeah. I just, yeah. I mean, the whole, what he's doing is very interesting. It's just, it's either like, you know, it's like I wrote a poem once and I submitted it to a magazine and they wrote me a rejection letter and it said, this is the kind of thing that's either just right or not quite. And we are afraid yours is the latter.
And wow.
That's how I feel about Guy Maddin.
And I feel the opposite.
He's just right for you. Yeah.
For me more often than not. And like his most recent feature, The Forbidden Room, is maybe my favorite of his features. And it's just so weird and it's cool. And it's a different style. Like it's not all black and white. And it kind of like, what's the dolls, like the Russian dolls. Like we keep going.
Nesting
further,
dolls.
Yeah, nesting dolls.
Further and further in. And it's so cool.
He's got
a new movie coming out this year. I can't wait.
I watched like half of that movie on Netflix a long time ago.
And you were like, fuck this all the way.
No, I remember thinking it was just like, I just remember thinking, I do remember having the thought that it seemed like a little bit like low rent. Like I was like, this seems like he didn't have much to work with, which is probably true. He probably didn't have a whole lot of money to make it. But
I think he's made most of his stuff for very little.
Right. Mm. But I mean, I remember being like intrigued by some of the imagery and stuff. But then at the time, I remember, you know, you always like, I have no like frame of reference for who Guy Maddin is at the time. So I'm just thinking like, okay, this guy's weird and he's trying to be surreal and weird. And it's just like, if you're trying too hard at that sort of thing, it really bums me out and it like turns me off. But I don't feel that way now. I don't think he's trying to be, I think maybe he's trying to be like impenetrable at a certain level, but. Like in something like The Forbidden Room, especially, but, you know, I think it's cool. It's just, you know, you can almost tell like people who have a control of themselves with that sort of thing and people who have no control and they're just like throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks, you know, like, oh, this would be a cool image. It's like the guy, what's that fucking French guy's name who does the tire movie that kills people, the tire,
Quentin Depew.
Yeah. That guy strikes me as someone who has no idea what he's doing. And maybe it's not fair. I've never seen his films. I tried to watch his Dolly film, and it was brutal.
That's the new one, right?
Yeah. I got like halfway through it. I was like, I don't know if I could finish this thing. Well,
I think I've only like actually made it through two of his films. And one of the recent ones with like the superhero group that is promoting cigarettes. It's like a framing story. Like I thought that was funny, but like the tire movie I thought sucked. And like anytime I've like tried to watch one of his movies, I've been unimpressed outside of that one.
I'll tell you,
he does seem like he's trying too hard.
I'll tell you something about Dolly. Now, when that movie started, it starts with a reporter in a hotel room and she's going to interview Dolly. And then Dolly arrives and he gets out of the elevator at the end of the hall and she goes out in the hallway to wait for him. And he starts walking towards her down this hallway, and he's talking to her the whole time. He's, you know, he's introducing himself. He's, oh, I had trouble getting over here. Oh, the limo was this. And then it'll cut to her, and she's like, okay, you know, and she's like real nervous about it. And then it cuts back to him, and he just like never arrives. It's like a 3.5 minute scene of him just coming down this hall, and it's like a never ending hall. And I was like, that's really interesting. And while it was going on, I was like, this would be amazing if this was the whole movie. Like, if they could somehow stretch this out to 80 minutes or whatever this movie is, I was going to be so impressed. But of course, they, you know, they give up after 3 minutes. And
there's something about taking on Dolly as a subject that I hate. Mm. And maybe I hate you if you think you can handle like
right.
the surrealism of Dolly. Like,
right,
I'm
right.
the perfect guy to yeah. to like visualize this. Perfect director. Yeah, I don't know. Kevin, I do want to make one. Or sorry.
No, I was just gonna say he does the whole he does the whole Bob Dylan thing. The Todd Haynes you know, multiple actors playing him. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was just gonna make one correction to what Kevin said, because this is like the best thing you've ever seen. My Winnipeg. So it's up there, and I got 45 minutes in on various, like. I found the first three parts, 15 minutes each, on YouTube. Ooh. And then it's like, where is the rest? Couldn't find the rest. I found this like Daily Motion video that had the whole thing, but like there were ads. The ads were crazy. It would freeze all the time. So I just bought my Criterion Blu-ray last night, late at night. And I'm gonna finish it when it gets here. I'm really excited about it.
Nice.
But yeah, I don't. Maybe I have like a weird. I saw this movie when I lived in New Orleans. Was going to school. Like it played in theaters at the Canal Place,
mm-hmm.
up there, and I had no idea what I was walking into. And I really, really liked it, and went down a rabbit hole and like ended up writing like a couple of like essays in film school, based around Guy Maddin stuff. One of my like prompts was just like, I think it was like just like this bullshit, like watch a movie and compare like its style to something old, basically, like identify like I was comparing it to like German shit, but I don't know, I did a lot of bullshit writing in film school, and I loved writing about Guy Maddin, Guy Maddin and Juan Corway. A lot of writing about those two.
Such a hero. This guy, classic film nerd in college. I love Wong Kar-wai and Wes Anderson. just kidding.
Look, I saw In the Mood for Love in high school.
He's ahead of the curve, Kevin. Well, don't get it twisted. He owns Wong Kar-wai.
I think I was such like a moody, like little bitch of a high schooler that like when I saw In the Mood for Love and what it was doing, I was just like, this can never be topped. And it still hasn't been topped.
It's weird. That's weird you say that too. Cause it's so, that is so accurate. Like I feel like if I had seen In the Mood for Love when I was 18, even, it would have blown my socks off, you know?
Yeah.
And,
wait, he just keeps repeating the same musical cue over and over. What?
I just think like even like that? The two like separating the stories the way he does, like that's like a thought I'd had before, you know, as a younger man. Like, oh, it'd be cool if they made a movie with just these two separate stories that almost aren't even connected. It would just be so like out there, and it's so crazy, you know. And then I watch this movie all these years later, it actually does it. I'm just like completely unimpressed by it. I just like, you know, but if I had seen that, you know, in my 20s or as a teen, I would have just, yeah, it probably would have been like Garden State for me, you know. It would have been like I would have seen it 5 times in the theaters, you know.
Fuck.
But then maybe it would have been like Garden State in that these years later, now I can't even look at Garden State. Like, it's disgusting, you know. It's does not work on this level. So
it never
for
did.
You somehow wrong Wong Kar, you. For you somehow Wong Kar-wai transcends from your adolescent immature movie brain to the mature, you know, middle-aged movie brain that you have now.
It's weird because I definitely had a lot of like Garden State style stuff that I loved. I mean, like when Thumbsucker came out in 2005, right. I think it was, Like, I loved that. I was like, this is so profound. And, like, I love all these other movies that, like, I still think are profound. And Thumbsucker is just, like, this dumb, like, indie movie where it's just, like, has nothing to say. Like, oh, Keanu Reeves is a psychiatrist? That's what a cool thing. It's a dumb fucking movie. It hooked me completely.
Mm-hmm. Like, speaking of, like, the first time I saw Rubber, the tire movie, I was like, oh, this is fucking brilliant. Like, this is like Chuck Palahniuk, but in a movie. And then, like, I watched it again, like, years and years later. It's like, this is shit.
Yeah.
And it's stupid.
I think it's cool that you even, like, recognized something to compare it to at the time. I did not. I don't know why. I don't remember why I hated that movie so much when I saw it, but I did.
I don't know.
I never saw it.
Yeah. I don't know.
Full disclosure.
I feel like I compared Palahniuk to, like, a lot of stuff that maybe didn't necessarily deserve it. Like, I remember thinking, like, a scene from Orange is the New Black was, like, very Chuck Palahniuk. But then, like, thinking about it, I was like, I don't know.
Is any Chuck Palahniuk still good?
You know,
have we had this conversation before? I don't know.
We might have.
I don't know how I feel about Chuck Palahniuk, but I know that I don't want to revisit any of it.
I know the last one that came out was Drivel, and, like, he had a business manager who, like, fucked him over out of, like, millions and millions. So, like, he has to kind of, like,
keep writing
to, like, you know, to live. Okay. But I don't know. So it's like, you get 3 chapters in, and it's like, okay, like, oh, another page where it's a lot of incestual rape. Whoop-de-doo. Like,
yeah.
And, like, you know, then you see, like, oh, there's another 180 pages of this? Like, what? Like,
I can think of, like, cool things that some of his books did, or things that I thought were cool at the time. I remember the point of view, the voice in Invisible Monsters.
Yes.
That was called, being cool.
Yeah.
I remember liking Survivor a lot.
Yeah.
And that character feeling very unique. I remember the, like, oral history of Rant being very cool.
Yes.
And, like, the setting as well. Sort of, like, the day-night divide. But I have no idea if those things are actually still cool.
I don't know.
And I remember I remember reading, like, 50 pages of the book Pygmy and being like, I think that Chuck and I are done. Did not finish that book.
I ended up finishing it, like, a long time after I started it. I don't know. Like, I reread Fight Club, and that's, you know, good. It's not great. Like, same with the movie. I would say it's good, but I don't think it's great. I would want to reread Invisible Monsters and Rant, because those were always my favorites, but the rest of his stuff is just like, okay, it's like
Lullaby was a big deal.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That was a big one. With the SIDS. Yeah. That sounds like I don't want to read that. I don't want to read that.
No.
Mm-mm. Yeah. No SIDS for me.
Yeah. Choke was okay. Same with the movie.
I hated the movie.
I don't know.
I barely remember it. But the I always wanted a Survivor movie, but I don't know. What are we talking about? What are we doing?
You guys got off on Chuck Palahniuk.
Yeah, I compared it to Rubber.
sorry about that.
It's okay. All right.
A movie we didn't like compared to an author we also probably don't like.
I'm gonna go next since you guys are both.
Yeah, we took up a lot of time.
Things. I watched Firebrand, which is a period drama about Henry VIII and his last wife. And Jude Law plays Henry VIII, a sort of morbidly obese, dying slowly. Henry VIII sick all the time, you know, and paranoid. And Alicia Vikander plays Catherine Parr. And I didn't know, I don't know anything about Henry VIII outside of, like, you know, he had a lot of wives and he had them, he had some of them killed, I know, and he chained, you know, Church of England, all that stuff. I mean, I know the basics, bullet points. But this movie is about, it's from the perspective of Catherine Parr, and she, like, you know, wants to, she doesn't agree with him on anything, and she's sort of, you get the impression that she was sort of roped into this whole situation where she's the Queen of England. And he's obviously paranoid about that. And Jude Law gives a sort of a, you know, fiery performance as Henry VIII, angry, you know, vicious and violent at times. But overall, it's just your average sort of boring, more boring than exciting period drama. And it's unfortunate because the trailer made it look really exciting, but it's not that exciting.
Have you guys heard of the musical Six?
No.
I have not.
It's like Henry's six wives basically presented as like a girl pop group concert.
That sounds great.
It's interesting. You know, it's like divorced, beheaded, died. Divorced, beheaded, survived. She's a survived. And that's how she's, like, how you said she's portrayed is how she is presented in that
as well.
So that, you know, I don't know anything about Catherine Parr either besides she lived.
Yeah, I mean.
Apparently, she had another guy she wanted to marry and had to marry the king instead.
Yeah, they get into that a little bit.
Yeah, like when you said she was roped into it, it's like, well, yeah, I mean.
Well, I mean, you know, like, yeah, I guess I don't know.
Low life expectancy at the time for
being
roped into marrying Henry.
I guess if the king wants to marry you, and you're in, you know, that period of England, you probably jump at the chance, right? To live the lifestyle even for a moment. To not, like, live in a barn or something, you know? You have to live in a palace with servants and, like, eat cake and shit. Like, you know, like, an average person probably never eats cake in their entire life at that time. And this person gets to, like, try things and, like, enjoy life a little bit.
Is that, yeah. I mean, did she come from poverty? I mean, I know.
Oh, see, I don't know.
Like, yeah, I doubt that she did.
The second beheaded one was not royalty, I don't think. But I think the others mostly came from, like... Like, they were at court.
Mm. Yeah. Again, I know nothing. Even less about how politics worked at that time or how the king would have found a wife, you know? Like, I remember thinking at the end of The Favorite, obviously Anne has had some sort of a stroke in the last few scenes.
Yeah.
And it's like, when Anne dies... Is there going to be like a civil war or something? I don't know anything about English history. Like, there's no one to take the reins here.
Who is after Queen Anne?
Right, because there's like she doesn't have any kids, so it's got to be like a cousin of hers or something takes over, or maybe France invades. I don't know what happens.
Well, I'm gonna find out right now.
Okay, yeah. You do that. So, anyways, that's Firebrand. I can confidently tell you to skip it. Nah, it's not worth your time. Although I will say. Some incredible double performing from whoever plays Jude Law's body double in the movie. It's pretty interesting the editing that they do to make him look like he's more massively overweight, even though I don't think he gained a pound, quite frankly. Kevin? I don't even know if he's going to go JR. I don't know. JR's looking
at George the First. He came next.
Yeah, so I'm looking at his page right now.
Yeah. Okay. So I really didn't watch a whole lot lately, but I went back through the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit movies, and cuz I had reread the Hobbit.
Sure, and, I want something below 2 hours. I'll watch 86 hours of Lord of the Rings.
Well, it also took me like 2 weeks to do all this. So, you know, watch a little bit here, a little bit there. I don't know, every now and then I just like get into a funk where it's like I don't want to watch anything, so I just put something on. And you know, Lord of the Rings tends to be a little more interesting, even though I have, you know, problems with it, like a lot of people, I think, do. Anyway, but I had reread The Hobbit, and watching those movies again, like, I understand why people were, you know, a little more up in arms about, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's in there that doesn't need to be. The tone of the tone of the characters is really inconsistent in the book. I think I told John, like, there's video of one of Tolkien's publishers going, "You didn't go around editing Tolkien." And I'm like, why the fuck not?
You're going to get us all fucking shot, man.
Yeah, it's like, whatever.
It's the fucking Tolkien people, man.
At least it'll get us some traffic. Anyway.
Aggregated. Little podcast based in Louisiana says mean thing about Tolkien. Here are their addresses.
We all got we get swatted.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, like, the tones of the characters are inconsistent. And I think, like, they make lots of people in the movie, like, way too dour for, like, no reason. They also, like, you know, make it, like, you know, just like, there's not anything wrong with making things lighthearted, you know, like,
I mean,
it's a 3 foot high guy who eats 7 meals a day. Like, you know, anyway,
I mean, you're right. Except that we have like a blockbuster filmmaking machine in America that's like all about stakes. You know, it's always got to.
That's true.
For serious.
Yeah. Anyway, I still think the Lord of the Rings movies hold up. Like, it's actually kind of surprising, like, how good they really look for movies that have, you know, were made like 20 years ago.
Shot like, on they're, film.
Yeah. Well, I mean, their special effects hold up. The performances hold up. Yeah. I mean, apart from, you know, like, nitpicks with the source material, like, it all, you know, holds up pretty well.
How did that 48 FPS hold up on the Hobbit?
Not great. I'll say looks
movie experience I've ever had.
It very much, you know, it's like, what am I looking at?
Well, you're like, looking at the worst version of the shittiest settings on your television.
Oh yeah, yeah. at least it's not what they call that, soap opera mode.
I mean, I feel like there's some mode on your. I feel like when I saw that in theater with, and I also think that I did the 48 FPS with the 3D glasses, and I was like you made me pay a lot for
he fully for
sport mode on my television.
He fully bought into the whole 48 frame hype.
No, I did not. I went to this film with
the future. This is great.
I went to this film with a friend I worked with at the restaurant who was really, he was like super excited. I was not super excited. I actually saw Avatar with that guy too. Like he was so in on these blockbusters.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. You gotta turn on that motion smoothing, get those frames up.
Indeed.
All right, JR.
Cool. I watched. I only saw a few things. I watched The Instigators, which is the new Apple Plus movie, directed by Doug Liman, starring Matt Damon and Casey Affleck, co-written by Casey Affleck. And I heard only bad things about this movie, so of course, I was like, my boy Dougie Limes, I gotta check it out. You know, he can.
Did you watch the Roadhouse remake?
I did.
Okay.
Because of Dougie Limes.
But that was a mistake, right? So, like.
Well, I mean, and I gave like my inexplicably high rating to the Roadhouse movie, even though I have very little good things to say about it. Very few good things to say about it.
You just like Doug Liman. You don't have a. You can't be objective.
Yeah, that's probably true. But I, like, in the first half hour of The Instigators, like, I chuckled a few times. So already I was like, wait, why do people hate this movie so much? And like, I would say the first half hour is probably the best the movie gets. But I think like the worst thing you could say about this movie, which is about Matt Damon and Casey Affleck, two people kind of like chose, recruited for like a really stupid and poorly thought out like heist job. It's like it just sort of like gets lazy at points and fizzles out. But like Casey Affleck is pretty funny in the movie, and so is Hong Chau, who plays like a VA psychiatrist who's helping Damon through some stuff. Michael Stuhlbarg and Alfred Molina are the people like who put this heist together, and they have a couple scenes that are funny. So it's like there are people in this whose roles work and who get some good lines, but it's ultimately dumb. And like when you get to the end, you're like, that's the end? Like that's all you like came up with for the end? And it's so like I'm not recommending it. It's not good, but it did make me laugh. And some of the stuff looks cool, and other stuff with like some explosions are some of like the most like poorly rendered explosions you'll ever see. Like with all this Apple money, how is this the way it looks?
Apple's about the bottom line, dude. They're just like, get this shit cranked out. Like get another horrible movie with some A-list actor in it. And,
that's the thing. Like,
JR will watch it.
They spend so much money on the actors, right? Like they're...
And Lyman.
Affleck, nope. Hong Chau, Michael Stuhlbarg, Paul Walter Hauser in one scene. Ving Rhames, Alfred Molina, Tony Jones.
Michael Stuhlbarg a lot. Michael Stuhlbarg premium.
No, but like... I have to go to like the third line. It takes 12 people before I don't recognize a name on Letterboxd. And then the next person is Rob Gronkowski, who's also there. This takes place in Boston, so he's got to be there for a second. And to be fair, one of those people is Andre DeShields, who is a Broadway actor that my wife and sister love very much. Here's Sarah in the background somewhere, but no idea why he's here. He doesn't sing. He just owns a bar. Two scenes.
He doesn't sing. So that's pretty good. Yeah. Well, this is a. I watched the trailer for this movie when it was released, and it's a must miss for me. It looks brutal, and I don't understand.
Not even had your list.
I cannot suffer through this, dude.
I really think it would be less brutal. It's less brutal than you think.
The
Jack Harlow scenes. Less brutal than you think.
Isn't Jack Harlow the guy who is in White Man Can't Jump?
Yeah, and that was
I liked him in that. I didn't mind him in that. God. I really did.
How did you watch that trailer and that not make your must miss?
I don't know if I even saw the trailer, honestly. I just watched the movie because it was on Hulu. But this one, I don't have Apple TV also, so it's like a chore to watch this one. But
sure. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not saying you should go out of your way for this. I mean, Apple TV is currently like my, you know, my former Peacock. Like, I'm watching Sunny right now, which is fine. I watched, there's been a lot of like Apple TV on. Sarah and I have basically been watching like 8 minutes of Ted Lasso at a time. This just like forcing ourselves to finish the third season. But I don't know. They throw a lot of money at a lot of projects, and some of them are almost worth watching.
Well, I haven't seen one yet that has been, but
what are you talking? You liked Masters of the Air.
I did like Masters of the Air. That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. I forgot all about it, to be honest, but yeah, I did like that.
They have to have some decent TV.
That was good.
Have to.
Anything else really besides that?
I like Pachinko a lot. Second season that's coming out, but I haven't seen it.
Okay. I don't know. It's too woke. All right. just kidding. All right. Well, I watched Trap, the new M. Night Shyamalan movie. This is more my speed, JR. You know, you can watch Pachinko. I'll watch Trap.
I've never seen Pachinko.
Trap isn't is typical M. Night. You know, this late career M. Night, where he's made his comeback and he's starting to slump back into his old routine, and he's just pumping out really generic thrillers with really interesting concepts that go nowhere. And
slow horses. People love slow horses.
Yeah, I've heard. Yeah, I don't. It's slow. This is another. It's TV is so fucked, dude. Because it's like, I feel like I remember Slow Horses being announced like it's coming this, you know, November, and it's like in the beginning of the year, and now it's on season 3, 4, and I'm just like, yeah, season it's 4. Fucking insane.
It's the only TV show like in existence where they're like actually making it like a TV show.
Ugh.
Reappears every 8 months. Okay.
Too much, dude.
Trap.
Too much.
Sorry.
Sorry. Trap is a really interesting idea where they have these, you know, this trap set for the serial killer. They somehow know that he's going to be at this Taylor Swift-esque concert. More like a Billie Eilish sort of thing, actually. But, although with about, you know, it's supposed to be 30,000 fans. It looks like it was about 1,400 people there, max. But, you know, they do what they can. And the whole thing falls apart really quickly, like logically, but that's okay. Like if you turn your brain off, it could have been fun. The problem with this movie is they leave the arena at some point, and then there's literally like, I'm going to say 40 minutes outside the arena, which is just a huge mistake. Huge mistake. Mm. The whole movie should have been in the arena. What a mistake.
Yeah, but I definitely assumed it would never be. Left the casino.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you would think so, but and the way he manages to get out of the casino the arena isn't terribly interesting. Like there are no moments of like him being clever. There's a couple like here and there where there's a moment where he's able to get a radio so he can listen to what the cops are saying. But aside from that, like, there's not a whole lot of him finding clever ways to get past, you know, this situation that he's in. And, like, that's what I was looking for. I really thought there would be a lot of that, and there's just not. And it's sort of a bummer because it makes the movie a lot less interesting. And I think Hartnett's good in it. Although, I mean, it's not a performance that's, like, you know... It's not serious. It's a very goofy performance, but it's fun. And, you know, I think the people have been saying it, but Shyamalan gives his daughter way too much to do in this movie. She plays the pop star, and for some reason she becomes part of the story. You know, it's just like, why would that ever happen? It's
she is like a pop star,
a
right?
Singer, yeah, she was aspiring, I would say. I've never heard of her, but it's like, can you imagine like going to a Billie Eilish concert and somehow Billie Eilish is helping you out of a jam later? Like, it's just like, why would this ever happen? It's like you never get close to these people. Like, even if you got in a room with them, there'd be 500 people in the room, you know? Like, and in this movie, not to spoil anything, but Josh Hartnett manages to get her alone in her dressing room, just the two of them. Which is just like, it's so far from reality. It's like, that was the hardest thing to believe, that they were able to make that happen. But, and then just really strange, like, this isn't a huge deal, and I don't have anything against Haley Mills, but like, Haley Mills is in this movie for some reason. I don't know why. She plays like the FBI profiler, and it's just really bizarre because she's Miss Bliss on Saved by the Bell. And she was like in the original Parent Trap. I don't know if you guys know.
Yeah. Who. That Haley Mills?
Yeah.
What?
She's like 90.
I didn't know she was working.
And yeah.
Like every time you hear her voice, I'm just expecting her to talk to Zach, you know? Zach, you must turn in your homework. And I was just like,
oh my God.
It was really bizarre seeing her in this.
I had no idea she was in Saved by the Bell.
What? I didn't watch Saved by the Bell.
Saved by the Bell was created for Haley Mills as a Haley Mills vehicle. It was it was originally called. It was called like The Adventures of Miss Bliss or something. And then they changed it to Saved by the Bell whenever she left.
What the fuck? And they started
following the kids. I'm not kidding. This is a real thing.
So, okay, like, but so does that mean like the first couple seasons of Saved by the Bell are like all about her?
Yes, it's about her and her personal life. What? It goes home. She goes home, and there's scenes at her home. Have you guys not seen this? No.
Dude, like, why?
Good morning, Miss Bliss. The show is called Good Morning, Miss Bliss.
Oh man.
And then and Saved by the Bell, they're saying, according to this, Saved by the Bell is a spinoff of that show.
I mean, here's
Good Morning, Miss Bliss.
Looks like Screech.
Yeah, Good Morning, Miss Bliss had Screech. all the actors in it. Like
Holy
Mr. Bell.
Shit.
Mark Paul Gosselaar, Dustin Diamond. Yeah, all these people were in it. I can't believe you guys weren't big Saved by the Bell heads when you were kids.
No, I Saved by the Bell was like the thing that came on after the cartoons, mm-hmm. and I was like, "Well, morning's ruined."
I was the opposite. I never watched the cartoons. I only watched Saved by the Bell, and I watched every single fucking day. And they used to play these They would play Good Morning, Miss Bliss reruns, but as Saved by the Bell, they put the Saved by the Bell intro onto it.
Apparently,
as if it was the first season.
Apparently, this is like part of like the. Saved by the Bell complete series set.
Yeah. No, of course. Wow. Yeah. It's like the first season, essentially. It functions as the first season. Anyway.
Okay.
News to me.
Mind blown. Believe
that. That is wild. Anyway. This movie is, I would say it's almost not worth your time, Trap, but it is like, it has some sort of a charm. It is kind of fun, and by the end of it, it's, you know, there's some part of you that wants there to be a sequel, and it's very much set up for one. So, you know, check it out at your own. It did
super well.
Okay. I don't have no idea how it did, but I could guarantee there'll be a sequel of it, though. It doesn't matter how well it did.
Who is funding Shyamalan? I don't know.
Warner Brothers? Universal.
Who knows?
Universal. Yeah. Who knows? Anyway, Kevin?
30 million. Cross 30 million.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's more than doubled its budget already. It's been like 2 weeks. So it's fine.
It's fine. Yeah. They'll make a sequel for sure.
Yeah, or they'll 2027.
They'll make a sequel. They'll make like a sequel of old, and then Josh Hartnett will show up in that sequel, and it'll be like, it's all connected to Shyamalan's universe.
Yeah, and Batista will show up like, I told you it was the end of the world.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, Kevin?
All right. So, real quick, I rewatched The Birdcage, Robin Williams, Nathan Lane, Hank Azaria, Gene Hackman, Diane Wiest, Calista Flockhart, just fucking hilarious movie. Like, it's still so funny. Like, it kills me. Like, I can recite like so many of the lines, and I'm still laughing out loud. And I finally got around to watching The Boy and the Heron, which I was like. Like, wow, like this is very, very different from any other Miyazaki movie that I've seen. The parts where the kid is like running to like the hospital that's on fire, like that was very different than anything he's done. For me, though, it went on a little long, and it's like kind of got to a point where it's like, oh, well. So now you're doing this other thing as well as doing the thing you set out to do. So it's like, OK, this is getting kind of convoluted and not as interesting, but. I don't know, it was still worth watching. It's funny, like, I still think my personal favorite Miyazaki movie is his Lupin the Third, Castle of Cagliostro, but I know, like, yeah.
No choice.
It's not a hero choice because nobody even knows that fucking
movie. That's what makes it a hero choice, Kevin. You don't understand. I like the movie that no one else likes.
He was yeah, he was good before he was popular.
Right.
Well,
to be fair, I've seen two of his movies.
Oh, okay.
I only like Ponyo out of the two, so.
I still think you were a little unfair on Mononoke, but I think that was a little I think that's a little more you like that was a little more of a thing between you and Jordan.
It's also
maybe.
Yeah.
Kevin, you've got the hero choice for favorite film. John definitely has the hero stance for
yeah.
I'm not gonna go with this popular anime.
I don't like anime in general.
I know.
Sorry. Like, you know, I don't know that I'm not against anime. Like Akira is a masterpiece. You know, I like Ghost in the Shell. I like some of the ones that I've seen are great, but, and like some of the first sequence in Memories is amazing, but, just overall, like, I don't know, most of them have not worked for me. Now I will say I was watching, Howl's Moving Castle. Which one is the Howl's Moving Castle? The one where her parents turn into pigs at the beginning?
Spirited Away.
I was watching Spirited Away with Amelia, and she got freaked out when the parents turned into pigs, and we had to turn it off. But I was into that one so far. I was like, this is keeping my attention. I will continue to watch this. And she never wanted to finish.
Sounds like you made it about 8 minutes, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I think we made it a little past that. She didn't like that scene, and then they went away and the girl met that boy.
Yeah.
They were running all over the place. Anyway, yeah, I was enjoying that. I would have kept watching that, but, you know.
Yeah.
You got to have a reason to watch it, like, with my kid. That's all.
Tell her to, like, suck it up. Yeah. Go through that stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
It's like Renee struggles to get through movies the first time because she's wary of conflict, I think. Like she has to be reassured that Hans and Frozen, he's like a bad guy. He appears nice, but he's a bad guy. But like she loves the Kenneth Branagh remake of Cinderella. Don't know why.
It could be good. I don't know.
She handles that one better because she thinks that the stepmom in the animated one is too mean. She doesn't like how mean she is. And like Kate Blanchett's pretty mean too, but I don't know. Maybe just we couldn't get through Lion King recently because Scar is too mean and the hyenas.
Yeah, she doesn't like Lion King. My kid doesn't like Lion King because Mufasa gets killed. She doesn't like that. She's like, the dad gets hurt. I don't like that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, she's got a long future of reading Hamlet, so she has to figure this out.
I'm going to start forcing it down her throat pretty early.
Yeah. I think Totoro would be right up her alley, but I think you've said like she has zero interest, so.
She won't watch. I mean, but I don't know. Like, it just depends on what day it is and when I show her stuff. Like, sometimes she'll be into it, sometimes she's not. Like lately, she's been wanting to watch all the Charlie Brown shit, so I've been having to watch all that. Like, I watched like three of the shorts with her, and I watched the circus with her, the Charlie Chaplin movie. She wanted to see that, so we watched that. Now, she was not interested, of course. I mean, she liked it. She was interested for about the first 10 minutes, and then she started like playing on the floor, and I was like, that's fine. I've never seen this. I'll watch it, you know.
You should try showing her A Town Called Panic. It's on Canopy.
Tell her
Stefan and Sebastian really like it.
Yeah, I'll do that. I never think of Canopy. All right, who are we on right now?
JR.
Cool. I hit the Bike Riders as soon as it came to Peacock, the Jeff Nichols film. I know you watched it. Did you talk about it?
I did not, I don't think. Because I just had too much stuff and I didn't have a lot to say about it.
Yeah, I don't have a ton to say about it either besides my interest in this film was like mostly because of Jeff Nichols' brother, who is a musician that I love and like... I followed his career for a long time, and Jeff Nichols confirmed, you know, for me on a podcast, he was saying like his brother Ben gave him this book, The Bike Riders. You know, his band Lucero has a song called The Bike Riders about Benny and Kathy that's like 20 years old. And that song is featured at the end of the film. And like, this is it's a film that it, like, it is at times interesting, and sometimes the relationships feel interesting, but like, there's not really a story, and sort of what they turn the story into of like this group, like getting kind of deeper and deeper into like crime and original members being disillusioned, like that, like never for one second felt like it played, that never, it never felt real. It just, it didn't make any sense to me. And I cannot, I cannot, and I could not get over some of the accents, which it bugged me that I could not handle Jodie Comer's accent, but I could.
Yeah, it was a little.
It's not just the accent; it's like the whole, like the wide-eyed enthusiasm of the performance is just like, it's so much, and I think the movie, like, it can only work if you buy why Benny and Kathy would like be an item, and it doesn't make any sense. And like, she doesn't like the group, but it seems like Benny's gone, but she's like still like staying with the group to some extent. It's like, things are not sold well enough. And it was an admirable attempt at like adapting a book that is just pictures. And like, I understand like why the imagery like was important to him, and he wanted to try and make a story that made sense, and it just didn't quite get there.
Yeah, I feel similarly. I don't even have that deep of thoughts about it. Like what you're saying all sounds right, but I was just like sort of like it washed over me, and I was like mildly bored the entire time. And anything I wasn't bored by, I just felt very, very like sort of formulaic of like a, you know, crime movie, he says he was influenced by Goodfellas, which is like insane. I don't know. Like, I would never admit that. I would just never say it. Like, you know, like I'm making a movie about essentially like a mafia type situation, and I'm influenced by Goodfellas. I don't know. And I agree. The accents, Comer's in particular was, and Tom Hardy's, just really,
at least they built in like a reason for Hardy's. Like,
yeah,
they made it clear like he was obsessed with Brando and started this because of like seeing the movie The Wild One.
It's the best scene like, in the whole movie. The best scene in the whole movie is him watching The Wild One in his living room and being like yeah, and he's like doing the lines. I was like, this is great. I could use a lot more of this kind of stuff, you know.
that was cool, and that felt like lived in and real. And also right. Just the idea of like who would ultimately become like some sort of like crime kingpin, just being inspired by a movie about a dude riding motorcycles. Like, yeah, that's it's all cool. Just
completely accidental. And yeah, but other than that, I don't know. And the emotional stuff didn't work for me at all. Like when he breaks his foot and he cries and stuff, I was like, I don't know, you know, who cares? I don't know. This kid didn't care about the characters at all. I could give a shit.
It was before either of you logged in, but I was just kind of bored. Like logged into this call. I sent a video in the chat a couple hours ago. That was a it's like an edit someone did with images from the book, The Bike Riders, over the song from that band Lucero. It's like it has what these people looked like, and like I get, it's also cool. Like I could recognize a bunch of them, like the person that Norman Reedus plays from California that shows up. It's like in one image from that book, that guy's very clearly there. I was like, oh, I know who that is? He's disgusting.
All right. I watched a pair of westerns. Started with Warlock from 1959. It's directed by Edward Dmytryk, who I have not seen anything else by. but I probably will watch some things because this movie worked very well for me. I like this a lot. Richard Widmark was in this, Henry Fonda, Anthony Quinn, and then I don't want to, which actress? I can't remember if it's Jesse or Lily now. Dorothy Malone and Dolores Michaels. They're both good, but the one who plays the sort of central Henry Fonda's love interest, I want to say, was excellent. And in particular, Anthony Quinn, just like the last, I don't know, last act of this, I guess, with Anthony Quinn's, what happens to him and his turn and his acting is incredible. And I really enjoyed it. And I loved Henry Fonda's reaction to all of it. I don't want to say too much about what actually happens. And Widmark, just reliably great. Love Widmark also. So yeah, this movie rocked, and I will be watching it again. I really, really enjoyed it. Warlock. This is also one of those novels that comes up whenever you look for like good Western novels that are realistic. This one always comes up.
Mm.
So I haven't read it. Oakley Hall wrote it. I have not read it, but no. Anyway.
And you've, so you've not seen The Caine Mutiny?
I have not seen the Caine Mutiny. No, never seen that. Oh, is this the submarine thing? Yeah, okay. It's not, or they're not a submarine. What Naval. Is it? It's like a battleship or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a, it's also like a trial court, like a
right
horror movie.
It's like the, what's that movie with, Crimson Tide, except also in the courtroom. Like they try to take over the boat because the leader is.
Have I seen Crimson Tide? I don't think
I've seen that. Crimson Tide? Oh. All right. Well, anyway, Warlock is a winner. Check it out. Kevin?
I'm out.
JR?
Yeah, I watched. John, how many do you have left?
Just the one.
All right. Well, then I'll do a little combo here. I watched the Hurricane because like the newish Blu-ray was new to my library, and I knew that Denzel Washington had been nominated for an Academy Award for this. It's not great. It's like very much an older era of like biopic Oscar bait filmmaking. It's like, it's also just like a, it's like a mess. I don't know. I also thought it was a boxing movie, and it's very much not that. It's a, I mean, he does a watch as a boxer, but that boxer is imprisoned for the majority of his life for a crime he did not commit. And it's like about getting him out of prison, him trying to get himself out of prison. And Deborah Kara Unger, Liev Schreiber, and that other guy from The Mummy, like
Jonathan Hanna.
Yes, yeah,
the brother. He's on Frasier. I just watched the episode he was on Frasier the other night.
Of course he was. They're like trying to get him out of prison because a like a kid they are fostering has found Denzel the boxer's like memoir that he wrote from prison, read it, and is like, we have to fix this. It's just not great. I also watched Stowaway in the Sky because they have the Criterion collection of Albert Lamorisse's films. He did The Red Balloon and White Mane, like made all, you know, these little films for children that are just like very sweet. And Stowaway in the Sky is just like, it is wonderful. Like, it is so pleasant to watch. It's just this guy who has an idea for a hot air balloon, and you know, it must be like 1920s ish France. I mean, there were hot air balloons then. He's got a way, method for steering it, and it's mostly just him and his grandson flying around the countryside of France and running into things literally and into situations. And it's got really cool aerial photography, and I don't know exactly how they filmed it, but it's impressive however they did it. And again, it's just like the kind of thing where if she, like, I'm sure my daughter would be bored out of her fucking mind, but it should be something that she like finds just like so cool and sweet, because it is
awesome. I watched Man from Del Rio because you watched it and said it was good, and because I was coming off my Anthony Quinn high from Warlock.
Did you not like it?
No, I liked it. It's for me though, like, I want to say that it falls apart in the last 10 minutes. It doesn't, but for me it does. Like, it's like it's narratively sound, but I don't like the ending.
Okay.
And I was trying to think of why the ending rubbed me the wrong way. And I think I made this connection. It was wild, dude. We were on a play date with my kid and this couple that we know from a class, gym class. She's like friends with their kid, you know, so we went over to their house and we had a play date, and we're talking to the mother of the kid. And suddenly it hit me. I don't know why. Oh, because they were talking about Princess Bride. And I was like, oh, we just watched Princess Bride the other day. And then it immediately hit me. I was like, this is the exact same ending from The Princess Bride. You following me?
Yeah, that never would have crossed my mind.
I know, me neither. It was just out of the blue. It was like a bolt out of the blue, dude. I was like, this is crazy. He literally pulls the exact same shit that Wesley pulls at the end of that movie, and I don't like it in that movie either. Like, and that, maybe that's what, like, subconsciously I was like, oh, that's such a bummer, this ending is such a bummer. And also, I mean, just the sort of superficial, like, I would have liked a shootout. I wanted there to be a shootout. I wanted him to fight with his left hand, you know, or something, you know. But it's like, it's the way he figures his way around it isn't that clever. It's just sort of like and I understand, like, it's showing, like, that guy is a coward, that bartender, former gunfighter guy. And I get what's happening there. And I don't mind it on a thematic level, but there's something very, like, sort of let downy about it.
Okay.
You know, for me, that's just that's a personal thing. And other than that, I think it's awesome, actually. Like, Quinn is so fucking good in this. Katie Jurado is so fucking good in this. I love the idea of the movie is really interesting too. Like, they hire this Mexican this Mexican gunfighter as a sheriff or a marshal or whatever they hire him. And then but he's not welcome, you know, because he's Mexican, because he's an outlaw. They don't like him. Nobody, you know, they don't give him respect. And he's also like, he's a drunk, but I like the idea that you'd think he'd be incompetent, but he's the most deadly guy there. Like, he's just so fucking fast and good. Like, I love that. And like the shit when like at the beginning he goes in that bar and the guy wants him to shoot the card, you know, and he shoots. it's just really good. I like that a lot. So yeah, other than the ending, I really liked it. But boy, that ending brought it down for me. I'm sorry to say.
Just happy, you know, it's rare that we will actually watch the movies that we recommend to each other.
This one was on my watch list already. So when you watched it, I was like, damn, he beat me to that one. it was in my whatever it's called, the watched thing, the thing that you put clips in on YouTube, you can save clips to watch later. It was in my watch later pile as well on YouTube, and the print on YouTube is garbage. It's like a 360 or something. It's like horrible quality, but
you gotta get the Blu-ray from your local library, you know.
There's a Blu-ray of this?
Yeah, it was like a,
that's crazy.
The two, it was like a Blu-ray double situation feature. It was two Anthony Quinn westerns. The other one wasn't as good. I don't remember the name of it.
Okay, yeah. I'd still like to watch it. I went into his filmography and Harry Horner and Dimitrik, and I like watch listed all of the Westerns and all of their filmographies. So I'm into it. I mean, especially, I mean, yeah, Quinn just blew me away with both these performances. This guy's just so fucking good. I got to rewatch Oxbow Incident too. He's just, he's the man.
Yes.
Quinn. When I was a kid, Anthony Quinn is just, you know, he's the guy in Last Action Hero, you know? He's Cousin Frank or whatever. No, he's not Cousin Frank. He was the bad guy. He was the Mafia Don, right? He's, and he's just like a goofy guy, but he's such a good actor.
Did you ever see Barabbas?
No, never saw Barabbas.
I remember thinking it was very good, so might be worth your time.
Someone important made Barabbas.
Richard Fleischer.
Yeah.
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
And also more than that.
Red Sonja.
Okay. I feel like we're picking and choosing in a way that I don't agree with.
Soylent Green is his number one. Fantastic Voyage, Tora Tora Tora. Yeah. The New Centurions. See No Evil. I think that's on my watch list.
I really like 10 Relington Place. Did the Boston Strangler.
I did not like 10 Relington
Place. Vikings is awesome.
I guess I did like 10 Relington. I remember not liking this movie. I gave it 3.5. I have no idea why.
Mandingo, that's, you know, that wasn't great.
My dad loved Mandingo. He used to talk about it when we were kids. You should watch the movie Mandingo. It's about a slave who fights. I was like, okay, that's cool. I don't know.
That's such a weird movie to recommend to your kid.
Yeah, dude. He was into some wild shit. How about Violent Saturday? Is that any good?
Yeah, it is.
It looks interesting. Victor Mature, I like him.
I'm always, I don't know.
Oh, he did the Spikes Gang. Bro, the Spikes Gang is great. That's on your watch list. That's on my deep dive list, too. Spikes Gang.
Cool.
Speaking of which, I need to get that up because it is my pick. Okay, so we're done?
We're done.
Okay, so that's our show. Next time on the show, okay, I need to take this one off. Now correct me if I'm wrong, JR, you watched Bad Company, the Jeff Bridges Western.
Did
I? Am I wrong about that?
Like recently?
I thought you had. No, you didn't. It's still on your watch list. Who watched this then? I could have sworn I saw this on somebody's thing. And I was like, oh, I got to take that off my deep dive. Oh, well, never mind. I got confused. My mistake. We're not watching that. But,
okay.
Okay, yeah. I guess we're just going to have to do... I should just get it out of the way. We'll do rapid fire. Because I've been meaning to do that one for a long time, and I keep like not doing it. So we're gonna watch Rapid Fire from 1992, directed by Dwight Little, and starring Brandon Lee in his sort of.
You made other movies.
Yeah, I would say this is his breakout role before. His death, before The Crow and his death.
All right, Powers Booth.
Powers Booth is in this, Nick Mancuso.
And we'll all be watching The Crow remake before this?
I will not be watching that. I might rewatch The Crow, though. But, yeah, we're going to watch Rapid Fire, dude. One of the great early 90s action pictures. And just an easy 95 minutes.
Nice.
So I hope you guys enjoy. And and the tagline is great: unarmed and extremely dangerous.
Nice.
This guy uses his fucking kung fu, man. Wow. Or right. Jeet Kune Do or whatever it is, you know. All right. And until then, you know, thanks for listening. And visit our website, filmyak.podient.com. And, you know, follow us on social media and stuff if you want. And tune in next time. Bye-bye.
I hate Winnipeg.